Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Junkies. We're presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junks. A bit later in the show, we'll be joined by Captain Mike Cofield. That's coming up at 8:20, aviation expert. Right now, we head to the Rude Guest Hotline. Say good morning to a guy we've had on the show many times before over the years, Jeff Wise, aviation journalist, host of the Finding MH370 podcast. Jeff, thanks for joining us on such short notice. We do appreciate the time.
Hey, always happy to jump in.
So how much do you know about the particulars of this incident? It just happened at about 9 p.m. last night. And a bigger picture question, how common are close calls in regards to mid-air collisions like the one we saw here in D.C. last night at 9 p.m.?
Well, to your first question, there's a lot that we don't know. It emerged, as you say, in the evening last night that this regional jet had collided with an Army Black Hawk helicopter while coming into land at Reagan National Airport just outside D.C. Apparently went into the river. What I'm seeing is that no survivors have been found as yet. There were 64 people on board that jet, 3 on board the helicopter. It's frankly not looking very good. And as to your second point, yeah, there's been a spate of incidents recently. The Times had a really good report back in 2023 about near misses that were taking place at airports in the context of staffing problems at air traffic control towers. You know, this is one of these incidents where there's warning signs, and then finally something bad happens.
It's just horrific. Some of us have buddies that are pilots, and I texted one of my, commercial pilot and for major airliner, and he said, I asked him about all the military flights around here, and he said, yeah, it's not really that common in other major airports. You have this many military aircraft flying around, too, to kind of complicate everything. Is there any way we can avoid this in the future? Can we limit some of that?
Definitely. I mean, there are ways we can make aviation safer. It has been incredibly safe. An oft-repeated statistic in the last few hours has been that there hasn't been a fatal crash involving a U.S. carrier since 2009. But, safety is a matter of taking care, paying attention to detail, not cutting corners, It's not glamorous. It's not exciting. It's actually fundamentally very, very boring to just go through your checklists, you know, meet your requirements time after time after time. But when thing, you know, it's always easy to like, well, maybe we'll just cut this one corner. Maybe we'll just, you know, eliminate this one safeguard. And then, you know, everything is fine until suddenly it's not.
Jeff, I was taken aback by a quote I saw from Mary Schiavo, who used to work for the U.S. Transportation Department, former inspector general, where she said DCA is just a very busy airport that opened decades ago. It was supposed to close because it was too close to the city. Like, is it just too close to a big population center and all the congestion here in a small-ish city where it's just outdated? Like, it shouldn't even be there at this point? What's your take on that?
Well, it's definitely an operational challenge. It's close to the most protected airspace in the world, probably. Mm-hmm. And you've got military aviation, as you say. A lot of people want to use it, and a lot of very powerful people want to use it. Mm-hmm. And so how do you push back against people who say, you know, because, yeah, there's recently been pressure that there were more flights added, and people said, is it really safe to add these more flights? Well, maybe your congressman needs to get back for their Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Jeff, I'm sure you've seen just the reports that are online. Everyone's kind of gobbling up whatever information they can find. I don't know if it's accurate, but you see these flight paths that they say that the helicopter was going on. Some people were saying it was somewhat erratic. Did you notice anything unusual with the helicopter flight path?
Well, there's only partial information available because there's sort of data that every civilian aircraft is broadcasting mm-hmm. as they're moving through this airspace, and military aircraft don't have to do that. So it was mm-hmm. broadcasting a different kind of location information, and it's less complete right now. So I think there's a lot that we don't know mm-hmm. right now. Obviously, something went wrong. Like it seems like the Black Hawk was not where it was supposed to be at that moment. But even that is too preliminary to say. But, yeah, we just don't know. There's just so many unfilled boxes here.
What about the idea, you know, that the commercial airliner was, like, flying with that instrument, you know, whatever the rules are, and the other one, I guess, it was visual rules, and how normal and abnormal is that, especially at night? Can you give us some detail on that?
So, yeah, there's two ways that you can fly a plane: instrument flight rules mm-hmm. and visual flight rules. And the when the weather is really bad, you have to use instrument flight rules. But you can also use instrument flight rules when the weather is good, and you can see the weather seems to have been clear at the moment. The Black Hawk maybe was flying by visual flight rules, even though it's flying visually, meaning it's mm-hmm. the pilot is looking at the world around him to mm-hmm. orient. You're still under the direct control of the air traffic controllers. The air traffic controllers should have known where everybody was yeah. and should have told people, follow my instructions so you don't run into other people. Now, sometimes they don't, maybe somebody doesn't follow those instructions, in which case the air traffic controller might have to tell the other plane, hey, get out of the way, this guy's gone rogue. Listen, at this point, something really bad happened, and we don't know why. We don't know why these two planes are in the same place at the same time right now.
Mm-hmm. It's also, Jeff, it's also confusing to me, and we kind of talked about this earlier, and I understand there's a lot of military bases around here, and it's heavy military, I get it. But why a military helicopter would be flying so close to the airport, especially at night?
Yeah, that's a great question. My understanding is that there's a lot of helicopter traffic up and down the Potomac. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a busy airspace. There's lots of VIPs who have to go from point A to point B. I mean, this was a helicopter whose purpose is to carry VIPs around. And when I first saw that, I was like, okay, who is the VIP on board? And you can just imagine mm-hmm. the consequences if this was some, you know, mm-hmm. heavy hitter. There was no such person aboard. But, yeah, this is we're talking about the challenges of operating in this kind of airspace so close to the city. If you're going to do that, if you're going to try to operate in this ambitious environment, you better have your ducks in a row. And obviously they were not.
Yeah, you got to be on your game.
Did you notice anything unusual when you listened to the air traffic controls and their communications with the aircraft?
I did not, no. Yeah. But again, we're sort of operating in the fog right now.
Mm-hmm. What, by the way, just as a side note, I know you're big on the Malaysian thing. What's sort of your latest theory on that? I mean, have you solved that riddle yet?
I feel like we're closing in on it. You know, it's obvious now that we live in a very different environment from what we thought we were living in 2014. There have been a whole host of incidents where bad actors are getting involved in tampering with GPS data. We recently had the Russian GRU, military intelligence, was putting incendiary devices in cargo shipments, which could have easily brought down a plane. There's an amazing story in the Times recently about how the State Department actually had to make direct contact with the Russians to say, hey, stop doing this, or you're going to cause, you might trigger a war. Mm-hmm. So we know that this is a much more adversarial environment than we realized back in 2014. I think it's just a question of putting the pieces together. Mm.
So would you care to say what your current theory is on that one?
Yeah, I think there's a good possibility that it was a cyber hack, and I think we need to take. I think we need to start really taking seriously that we need to become more aware of the vulnerability of civil aviation to some characteristics. There was a crash in Vilnius, Lithuania, late last year mm-hmm. that did have the marks of a potential cyber attack. Mm-hmm. We just don't know at this point. This one, I think, is probably an indication of a different problem, which is just kind of overloading and underfinancing the air traffic control system.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, are you still surprised at the media interest about Malaysia Airlines Flight 370? I mean, it disappeared March of 2014, so it's been almost 11 years now.
I think there should be more interest, frankly. I mean, I know people are obsessed, but they should be obsessed, because it's absolutely crazy and bonkers that a plane with so many people just simply vanished into thin air, and there are the officials have no answer. They literally have no idea what happened to this plane. They can't. You asked me what the latest is. Malaysia has said that they have authorized this private company, Ocean Infinity, to start a third seabed search to try to find the wreckage. I don't think that they will be successful, but I'm glad that they're going to try. I think we need to really recognize that, like, if they don't find this plane on the seabed, we need to stop and say, okay, what are we failing to understand here? Because I think they're operating under false assumptions.
Joined by Jeff Wise, aviation journalist, host of the Finding MH370 podcast. You can download that on the Odyssey app. I'm sure you saw the story about the Gonzaga Hoops team whose plane was on the runway and almost collided with another plane at LAX as they were in LA to play a couple teams. I think it was a couple months ago or maybe last month.
Yeah.
How concerning is that? You know, the air traffic controllers are either understaffed, overworked, whatever it might be, where now you're starting to see these incursions on the wrong runways at airports and near misses. How concerning is that to you, and how concerned should we be about it?
Well, obviously, we should have been more concerned. It was these were indications of trouble, and when you have things almost happening, it's only a matter of time before they really do happen. And you know, it's similar to the issue you were talking about earlier with, like, here's an airport, it's too close to the city, it's too small, but people want to use it. People, you know, want to cut corners. And eventually you pay the price. We have to take these things seriously. And, you know, it's not enough to just make big promises and say that everything is going to get better because I'm going to wave my magic wand. This is nothing happens by magic. Things happen by boring, plodding, following the rules, keeping your nose to the grindstone, and you get what you pay for, and you can cut corners and cut corners. This is very similar, in my opinion, to what happened with Boeing, where they made an incredibly safe aircraft that, as a result of being so safe, was very successful and popular with the public. They got a dominant market share, and they started to realize, well, you know what, we can cut a couple corners, and we can make more money for our shareholders. And yeah, you can do that for so long. And then one day, you know, it stops working, and then you've got a tragedy on your hands. And it's a lot harder to build up a good reputation than it is to salvage a good reputation. You know, once you screw up, it's really hard to get people to trust you again. And again, this is what's going to happen here, I think.
Mm. Jeff, last question from me. So we all live in this area, right, in the DMV, the District, Maryland, Virginia. And I don't know. My one takeaway after all of this over the last 24 hours is I don't think I'm going to fly out of Reagan unless it's an absolute necessity. I'm just going to fly out of Dulles. I mean, why bother, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that people are going to be on their very best behavior going forward.
I think
there's going to be changes. And okay. And I'm hoping that, listen, it's still, this is something that people like me always say over and over again after crashes. It's still an incredibly safe way to get from A to B.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeff,
overall.
We really appreciate the time. Sorry, it only happens basically when there's an aviation disaster, but we appreciate the insight and the expertise, man.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Always happy to come on. Thanks.
Yep,
for having
thank
me.
You. I'm going to be sure to go download that Finding MH370 podcast on the Odyssey app.
I mean,
Drab and I have been talking about the case for years. It's fascinating.
So they've never found one piece of wreckage in that disaster?
I think they sometimes think they do, but I don't know if
I think they
confirmed.
Found wreckage. They just weren't sure if it was part of that. I think.
They think they find stuff floating in the ocean, but I don't know if they ever confirm it. I mean, Jeff would know, but.
Yep. So you can go to the Odyssey.
It literally
app.
Disappeared off the radar.
It's the
That's
Finding.
Like the thing of movies.
The Finding MH370 podcast. We appreciate that insight from him. Coming up in about an hour, Captain Mike Cofield. He'll join us at 8:20. Another aviation expert to try to give us some more insight into the disaster that unfolded at around 9 p.m. last night here in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back. Coming up in just about an hour, Captain Mike Cofield, aviation expert, advisor to the last four presidential administrations. He will join us to give us his insight on the disaster that unfolded around 9 p.m. last night as a passenger jet bound for Reagan National collided with a Black Hawk military helicopter, went into the Potomac. I mean, just disaster as 64 people were aboard the jet. Three aboard the Black Hawk helicopter, and we'll continue to get details throughout the show today.
So it had been 16 years since there was a U.S. commercial crash in the United States, and listening to our previous guest, it almost feels like, well, it was inevitable that something was going to happen at some point, and it's hard to comprehend. And every time they come up with like the top 10 most stressful jobs, air traffic controllers in there, it's hard to comprehend probably the incredible stress they have looking at all those dots and just dealing with, because there are so many flights. I remember we looked it up one day and it was like in the United States, it was, I might be wrong, it was something like 20,000 flights a day.
All right, that's
and this is just
seems
one
like
airport.
A small number based on
maybe
that.
It is
how
small.
Many airports are.
I can't remember the number, but just think of Reagan. How many flights are coming in? I take the GW Parkway home, and there's sometimes when I can literally see four planes like in a line. Yeah, you know, they're all separated by miles, but they're just one after another after another after
it's
another
a constant stream.
And then we've talked about it. If you're in this area. You're not unfamiliar with these helicopters buzzing by.
Right.
And sometimes, like, I'll be right on the GW Parkway, and they're no higher than 100 feet high.
Oh, yeah, they're zooming all around.
Right,
some
right
of them
on
are,
top of
well,
you.
Makes
some
you
of
wonder,
them, I think, have the president in some of them.
It makes you wonder why anyone would want to be an air traffic controller.
Oh, it just seems like one of the most stressful jobs on the planet.
It's not like they're making $1 million a year.
Or even a pilot. You're responsible for all those lives.
People love it. Yeah.
Did you ever want to be a pilot?
No.
I actually did. I think when I was, I mean, it was when I was in
never,
elementary school.
Ever.
Never.
I think in sixth grade. Do you remember? Did we have to do like a career report?
I'm sure we did at some
I'm pretty
point.
Pretty sure I did pilot and I was interested in it. I don't
sure
know
I said
why.
Baseball player. What kid didn't say baseball player?
Yeah, I wanted to be shortstop of the Orioles.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, great, but I think we had to pick a real career. I mean, I guess
sure
it is a real career.
Catcher.
I had a kid on my flag football team that was probably 13. It was just before high school. So 13, 14, that was already flying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was taking lessons.
Sure.
Flying with an instructor.
Flying already. He was flying like small aircraft at as a teenager, as a young teenager.
And then I ran into his dad 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And he's flying a lot. And like, I mean, he's... he's known what he wanted to do since he was a kid.
Yeah.
And he's doing it. I just,
Dina's
the
cousin,
stress.
Dina's cousin married a guy who's like a hobbyist.
Okay.
And they just, they occasionally will just like rent a plane. And then they fly to like, and go camping or something. And it seems like the most bizarre thing because it's not like he does it all the time. Couple times a year.
You can just go.
But he has his pilot's license.
He has his license.
You can just go rent the
small plane for a few hours or whatever, or for a day. Yeah, okay. You rent, because you don't. Not everyone owns a plane.
Right.
You rent a plane, and they'll go on a small trip or something. And to me, it seemed insane. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you trust him? The guy flies twice a year.
But yeah, he doesn't seem that seasoned.
Yeah, but that's what they did for you. It was like their fun thing, like their hobby. It's wild.
Like I said, I coached this kid. He's 14 years. Let's call him 14 because this is before high school, and he was already flying.
Yeah.
Man, that's nuts.
I mean, my hobby is seeing flops. My hobby is much lower on the thrill seeking
right.
than piloting an airplane.
Right, I'm just trying to
you
smash.
You think you're taking
golf
a risk
balls
when you're going all in?
Oh, yeah.
The pair of jacks.
It's so non-risky. Now, it is risky. You're all in with jiggities, and it's never great. It's hard to play pocket jacks. It's basically impossible.
That's the hand I won at MGM on Friday.
Very good. I'm glad you won
like $100.
Good for you.
If you want to give us a call, 800-636-1067.
Did your buddy respond to you?
Not
your buddy
yet.
That's a pilot?
No, who knows where he is. I mean, he flies all the time. He could be on the West Coast.
I don't have any buddies that are. I don't have anybody I know in my very small circle that are pilots.
Right.
I don't think I know any pilots either.
I have a guy that I know that's a cop. I've got my neighbor, Kevin, is a contractor.
You know, I've got another buddy, actually.
No pilots, though. No pilots that I can think of.
It always goes to your buddy, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, update on my dishwasher. Don't have to replace it. I feel like I got a life win yesterday.
That is a win.
Guy came to repair it.
Yeah.
Care to guess the total, including labor and the part and the repair?
$75.
No, it's not that good. I mean,
115.
I think like just to show up, they're charging you like $100.
Well,
like,
I thought you were bragging about how cheap it was.
I feel like this is getting off pretty cheap.
All right.
For a
150.
$300.
Well, you could
have got a new one for $500.
What was the fix?
I don't think so.
What was the problem?
You can definitely get a dishwasher.
Well, yeah, but he probably has a nice one.
Got fried.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can get a lower level dishwasher for $500-$600.
I mean, I can't have a bottom of the line dishwasher. I don't have top of the line. But
all it does is clean your plates. I mean, why are you going to spend $1,000 on it?
Though I did realize that in the 2 or 3 days where it was dead, there's very little that's worse as far as like home like chores than
washing
dishes by hand, like individually washing plates, coffee mugs, utensils. It's just the pits.
I hate all of the mundane things of life. I hate laundry, every aspect
laundry
of it.
Stinks.
Every aspect of
bad.
It, especially folding.
Yeah,
especially folding. Your teenage daughter's undergarment.
Yeah, well,
I'm out on that.
You gotta leave that to her.
I'm out on all female undergarments in my house.
Yeah.
And I hate every aspect of the dishes.
Right.
I hate putting it in the dishwasher. Like Jason loves it. I hate putting it in the dishwasher. I hate taking it out of the dishwasher and putting away.
Yeah. I don't think Jason loves that. I think he just hates clutter.
I love it. I just like having a clean kitchen.
No, but he doesn't mind it because I think he is so excited about it being clean that he doesn't mind doing it. And I just mind doing it more than I like it being clean.
Cakes, Whirlpool 24-inch top control built-in stainless steel dishwasher.
Yep.
$539.
I mean, that sounds like a reasonable
$229.
Price, but like, why would I buy a new one when I can get a fix for a $300?
I always go
that route. Well, I mean, because you're going to end up having to fix it again, and you're going to spend probably the same amount.
Maybe.
Why not get a new one and spend a couple $100 more?
I would rather just stroke the check for the $300.
I've been doing that
one for a few more years.
By the way, it's $529, but you also need to get that thing delivered and installed.
Yeah, it's true.
You keep thinking it's $529. By the time you're done, it's close to a grand.
I'm just talking about the actual price.
I've been doing that Band-Aid with my Sub-Zero fridge
sure.
for a good 5 years.
Yeah.
Every few years, just putting a few more hundred in it.
Right.
Just holding
just
out.
Just a big money pit.
Yeah. Because if you have a built-in nice thing with the panels and everything, and then your refrigerator goes extinct and don't make them anymore, now you got to redo your whole kitchen.
Right.
It's a nightmare.
Or, like in my kitchen, we have like an overhang over the refrigerator so that the refrigerator can only be a certain size.
Of course.
Like it's got to fit in that.
Yes.
It's got to fit in that alcove.
Yes.
And if it does fit in the alcove,
you're screwed.
Like you said, you got to start from scratch.
Yes.
And I'm not redoing that kitchen. Or that's what somebody else isn't coming in and redoing it. Of course.
Yeah, but you're likely to find.
I'm not redoing it.
You're likely to find other refrigerators that can fit into that alcove.
Trust me, it's not that easy.
Mine is a unique, very long and narrow thing.
You think it's easy? It's not easy. Trust
to
me,
like
it's not.
Nail it, especially when you've had it all designed nicely. Yeah. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible.
It's borderline impossible. It's pretty close.
And I got all the freezer shelves on the bottom and then on another bottom. And then we built a pantry above it. Mm-hmm. It's all screwed up now if I have to replace it.
So bottom line is, dishwasher's repaired. Now I'm just waiting for something else is just going to just break.
Right.
Like the dryer's going to just go in a week.
Right.
I'm just bracing for it.
I had a contractor over the house. You guys will get a kick out of this because I want to do a built-in. I want to move my simulator indoors and just take it to the next level.
Yeah.
Why did I think the contractor was over there to figure out something for your mom?
There's also that, too.
Yeah, there's multiple irons in the fire.
There's also that, too.
Yeah.
But that was the second. I told
that's
my mother
lower
that's
priority.
Secondary.
Yeah,
okay. It's secondary.
Top priority.
That's
like,
hilarious.
Like bars in a bathroom for you to hold on to. That's secondary. You got a walker. You're doing good.
I mean, did you tell your mom that spring's almost here? I mean, like you're gonna be playing like two or three times a week.
She knows.
Like she's
no. I'll be
you
there.
You got your
every
game
day.
On point.
But I had them look at my garage to raise my ceiling. That's a no go. It would just be way too expensive.
I'm sure.
And I need some storage.
Right.
I had them look at my media room to dig a hole to make, because you can't raise the ceiling in your basement, really, because
yeah.
there's no, so I said, well, what if we dig down?
Okay.
That was, and then I would lose my media room, so that's a no-go. We talked about doing a storage room. That was a no-go. A sunroom. Now I'm back to golf shed.
All right, we're gonna pivot here. We're gonna Muriel Bowser's press conference live from Reagan National Airport.
I'm the mayor of Washington, D.C. We are here at Reagan National Airport to provide an update on the tragic events of last night. I'm joined by U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, D.C. Fire and EMS Chief John Donnelly, American Airlines CEO Robert Eisen, the Washington Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority CEO Jack Carter, United States Senator Mark Warner, United States Senator Tim Kaine, U.S. Representative Don Beyer, as well as the Chief of the Metropolitan Police Department, Pamela Smith. And we are joined by first responders from across the Metropolitan Washington region. I speak for all of us when I say, and certainly all Washingtonians, how very sad we are for American Airlines, for the United States Department of Defense, and for all Americans for the loss of life that happened with the collision of these aircrafts. We know that includes families from across our region, as well as in Kansas and across the country. This morning, we all share in a profound sense of grief. I do want to thank the first responders who acted quickly last night, who ran towards danger, went into a very frigid river, and have worked throughout the night. Chief Donnelly reported in last night's briefing that we have a strong mutual aid agreement in our region, and those teams have worked together throughout the night in really tough and heartbreaking conditions. And we should all thank them for their heroic efforts. So we'll have several updates today. I'm first going to turn to the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, and then you will hear directly from Chief John Donnelly with a situational update.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, Sean Duffy here, Secretary of Transportation. We wish we were gathering for different purposes today. I just want to let you know that the Department of Transportation, the FAA, along with the White House, President Trump, local, state, and federal partners all working together on this incident in unison. I couldn't be prouder of this team that's been assembled, working tirelessly. Mayor, I want to thank you specifically for your work. A few details I'd like to give all of you, and some of you reported this, but last night, if you live in the D.C. area, you would know that this was a clear night last night. The helicopter was in a standard pattern. If you live in the D.C. area, you'll see helicopters up and down the river. This flight pattern is seen oftentimes when you live in D.C. This was a standard flight pattern last night as well. The American Airlines flight coming into land was in a standard flight pattern as it was coming into DCA. So this was not unusual with military aircraft flying the river and aircraft landing at DCA. And again, if you live in the area, you'll see that frequently with those two aircraft working together. As you many of you have reported, we have located the two aircrafts. The fuselage of the American Airlines plane was inverted. It's been located in three different sections. It's in about waist deep water. So that recovery is going to go on today as that recovery takes place of the fuselage of the aircraft. NTSB is going to start to analyze that aircraft, partner with the FAA with all of the information we have to get the best results possible for the American people. I would just say that safety is our expectation. Everyone who flies in American skies expects that we fly safely, that when you depart an airport, you get to your destination. That didn't happen last night. And I know that President Trump, his administration, the FAA, the DOT, we will not rest until we have answers for the families and for the flying public. You should be assured that when you fly, you're safe. Thank you.
At 8:20, we'll be joined by Captain Mike Cofield. He's an aviation expert, advisor to the last four presidential administrations, to get the latest and his insight on what happened last night here in D.C. as a passenger jet collides with a Black Hawk military helicopter. Jason just saw news that 30 bodies have been recovered. Mm. It's a recovery mission. It's not a rescue mission at this point.
Yeah, D.C. fire chief already released a statement. No survivors.
Yeah.
So they don't expect any survivors.
Right.
Just to shift the conversation for a moment, I got to say, out of all my friends, Cakes' memory may be the best. I don't even know why this was brought up during the break.
Because Eric, I saw somebody
all of a sudden said, hey, is Mark Fidrich alive?
Mm-hmm.
He was a pitcher for the Tigers, was a phenom early in his career.
A little
career.
Bit with the Red Sox later in his career.
I knew he was...
Nicknamed the Bird.
Yeah. No, but he remembered how he died.
Oh, that I don't remember.
I mean, he knew... But very specifically how he died.
I mean, I just, when I heard Mark Fidrich, it just triggered something in my brain that I remember that he died while working on his vehicle, and like part of his clothing got caught in, I guess, a moving part in the engine, which I wouldn't be able to tell you what part that was, but
so both
and it strangled him.
Both EB and I believed him, but I just wanted to check to see. Nobody would just make that up and be incorrect unless he was thinking about another person who died that way. But Cakes has that kind of memory for certain things.
Certain
like
things.
Terrorism.
That is the key.
Death. Usually
terrorism.
Death.
It's usually death.
It's usually bad.
Morbid.
That's his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So I look it up, and sure enough, it says he was found dead beneath his 10-wheel dump truck. At his home at 2:30, he appeared to have been working on the truck at the time of the accident. Authorities said Fidrich suffocated after his clothes had become entangled with the spinning power takeoff shaft on the truck. My point is not to give the specifics. My point is Cakes knew the specifics.
Right. Well, because I'm borderline obsessed with death, and if I hear a nugget like that, it gets stored into the gray matter. And usually
it never leaves.
Like if it's a weird way that somebody dies, and that
happened
that's
in 2009.
Yeah, but
so that stuck with you for 16 years.
Yeah,
why did Mark Fidrich's name come up?
I don't know. Because I follow this guy
that's like pitching guru, and I don't know, came up. Like, I don't know, maybe it's his birthday today or something.
Hold up,
no
you
idea.
Follow more than one pitching guru? Because I know you follow O'Leary. Yeah. There's another guy you follow.
Multiple guys who are
into
pitching.
Another guy. He's not as much into mechanics as he is just the nastiness of pitchers. So he posts videos all the time of like the 10 nastiest strikeouts of the day. You know, that kind of stuff. But
that wasn't his birthday, so I don't, point,
I don't know why he came
Here's
up.
The point. If you die in an exotic manner, and to me, that's like
I've never heard that
But
before.
if you die of like a stroke or a heart attack or just die of like old age, for the most part, I'm probably not going to remember that. But if you die because you're working on your dump truck and your flannel shirt gets wrapped around your neck, I'm going to remember
that. I got the film producer confused. I had the wrong one, but the guy that was impaled while he was driving. I thought it was Stanley Kubrick. I think it was maybe somebody else.
Right.
Right?
I don't remember who that was.
Drab looked it up and it corrected me.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that happened on like the Long Island Expressway,
if
my memory serves correct.
Yeah. Which whenever I go see Vinny and Joe, of course I'm on the
certain guys I remember,
look out for that LIE, bitch. Congested, and you can get impaled. Never know what's going
to
happen.
Apropos of nothing, and we're just trying to have somewhat of some light moments in a terrible day.
I'm glad you're bringing up
Alan Pakula directed
something famous.
Yeah.
Presumed innocent, Pelican Brief.
Maybe
see, that's the connection.
All the President's Men.
Yeah.
You want to really feel old and like near death, just look at this tweet from Tanya Harding. She looks like she's 100. She just discovered Twitter, apparently.
She just discovered that. I
just figured out how to get my account.
It
on
did
here.
Strike me that she was old, but my major takeaway was, how is she just getting onto Twitter in 2025?
Here's Tanya Harding's tweet. Hey, hi, by the way, she's like America's scoundrel because she
Nobody likes her.
She orchestrated taking out America's sweetheart.
Everybody hates her.
Right.
I know that we're all on Twitter, but what do you think the percentage of people that have Twitter? I know people who don't have it.
I don't know.
You have to be on Twitter. It's that she says, I finally figured out.
Hey, boomer.
What do you mean? Just hit new account.
It's nuclear physics.
Hi, everyone. I finally figured out how to make an account on here. Really?
How bad does
she pondered
look?
It for years?
Yeah.
No, it's worse on her Twitter, JP.
She's never looked good, in my opinion.
It's not about being attractive. It's about being old.
Yeah, she smashed into the wall.
She smashed into the wall, and so have I.
And she's
believe me,
tough
I can
life.
Relate. I saw a picture of me with my youngest in 2021, and I look like I'm dying then. That was 4 years ago.
Right. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah. How old is she?
Probably our age.
You're probably 55. She's honestly so wrinkly.
She looks like my mom. She looks exactly like my mom.
She got the crow. What do they call this?
Crow's feet.
Yeah. The crow's feet.
My mom's almost 70.
She was born in 70, so she's 54.
Is she a sun worshiper? Like, why is she so wrinkly?
I haven't heard her name or thought about her in 15 years.
Yeah, right. I mean, neither. But I just see her, and it's weird.
I wonder what she's been doing.
She has massive teeth, too.
She has big chompers.
Man, this
looks like Baba Booey.
She's definitely had teeth work.
This is a terrible picture of her in 2006. I can't imagine how bad she looks now.
Remember, I watched her sex video.
Yeah. With Galooly?
With Galooly. On
Jeff,
her wedding
Jeff
night.
Galooly?
Yeah. Jeff Galooly?
Jeff Galooly,
I think it was her wedding night sex video.
Let's see. She went to She went into boxing. Remember that?
Well, anything. Yeah, anything.
anything to make money.
Yeah.
How is she making money in 2025?
She's not.
How does she have income?
She makes no money.
Cameos, probably. Who would get a cameo?
Oh, who knows?
Tanya
she could be working at Walmart.
She does cameos.
Oh, I'm just throwing.
She doesn't know how to work cameo.
Probably.
If she doesn't know how to do Twitter.
She just learned Twitter. Yeah, that's
enough. Here you go, Jason. I finally found the new video.
Yeah, that's bad.
What's her deal about, like, most figure skaters, I would think. That's probably why she was popular. Most figure skaters probably come from very well-to-do, you know, families. I would think on the whole, it's very expensive, ice time, lessons to get to that level. And she was just a hillbilly. I mean, she was just trash. Man.
Isn't she from Drab's part of the world? Am I getting that correct?
She's from Oregon, yeah.
Drabby?
Yeah.
Can you claim Tanya Harding?
Well, she was just a freak athlete that somebody
comment
that the U.S. Skating Federation, like, trained her or something? Like, what's the deal? Like, there's no way she had money to afford all the lessons that it took to be elite.
Drabby, I feel like you kind of have to own her. She is from your neck of the woods.
She's one of your people.
I don't have to own people from Oregon.
No.
No.
I can if I want to, but I choose not to claim this one.
Okay, yeah. I can understand that.
It's so weird when you're famous for something, so it's just like awful.
Yeah, she'll never get away from that.
Yeah, she's infamous.
She began. Yeah. She began skating at the mall there. Which I've actually skated there. You go for free and all kinds of dogs
the Oregon Mall?
At the
Portland.
Did somebody discover her? And they're like, possibly, oh, this kid has talent?
She probably went there all the time.
Did she live in a trailer or something? Like, she literally had no dough.
They didn't pluck a young Drabby and say, hey, that guy's got some figure skating talent.
I was not selected.
I mean, that's kind of like the American dream. And then she went sideways with the whole breaking her knee. Or
yeah.
Her dad held various jobs. Drove a truck, worked at a bait and tackle store.
Uh-huh. I mean, just a regular hardworking guy, I guess.
He selling like night crawlers to people going fishing.
Earthworms.
She started skating.
That's honest work.
I don't know.
Get some crickets.
Yeah.
I wonder what Nancy Kerrigan's doing.
Sure, put a cricket on.
Well, it also says that she was in ice skating lessons at the age of 3.
Yeah.
Donk.
I don't know. Maybe yeah, that's why she,
there's no way she could afford it like long term. I don't think.
She was in ice skating lessons at the age of 3. She dropped out of high school to devote time to the sport.
I mean, my kids did lessons when they were earliest. My first couple kids, I don't think we ever did it with Kate. You know, it's just a class. They showed no promise, obviously.
Right.
Nobody cared.
So get out of here. Get the next crop in here.
Nobody cared.
See what they can do.
Yeah.
All right, don't forget, coming up at 8:20, we'll be joined by Captain Mike Cofield. He's an aviation expert. He'll give us the latest insight as to the disaster that unfolded last night. Details still incoming. I believe 30 bodies have been recovered out of the Potomac River after the collision last night around 9 p.m. of a passenger jet from Wichita about to land in DCA. It collided with a Black Hawk military helicopter. Captain Mike Cofield will join us at 8:20 here on The Junks.